Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my guest joining us from Israel is Kathy Kudiak. Kathy is a 59-year-old woman who loves life and continues to reinvent herself. She has been through some tough times with serious illnesses with two of her children, but picked herself up by her bootstraps and got her act together, moved forward, survived, and is thriving. Kathy wears several different hats. She's been an oncology physician assistant for the past 35 years with degrees from both Cornell and Emory universities. She's a certified massage therapist with special certification in massaging people with cancer, an infant massage instructor, a TAT professional, and is now starting a life coaching business, supporting young adults studying and working abroad. Her current full-time job is in personalized medicine research, where she now lives in Israel. Kathy also wrote her first book, which was traditionally published and is available at Amazon. And the title of the book is called Being Your Best Self, A Young Adult's Guide to Conscious Living. And I do have a direct link to Kathy's book at Amazon in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Kathy to the show. Good day, Kathy.
Hi, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure, and I know it's quite late there in Israel, and I really appreciate you staying up and sharing your experience with us. So,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the main reason I was really drawn to having you on the show is the fact that you indicated that you're a 59-year-old woman who has reinvented yourself multiple times. And, you know, my listener demographic is, it varies anywhere between 75% and 95% female. And quite often in the age range of the 45 to 55, you know, so, I mean, you're very, representative of my listener. So, I really, look forward to you sharing some of your experience and, helping listeners as well. So I guess the first thing to start with is, if you wouldn't mind, I did kind of, through the introduction, give a little bit of your background. So can you share maybe a little bit more than maybe I offered?
Sure. I guess the main thing that I wanted to get across as far as, inspiration for the listeners is my husband and I both have been through quite a bit in our lives. As you mentioned, we've had some very serious illness with two of our children. It started when we were in our mid-20s. And at first, when I was about 25 years old, I lost my 30-year-old brother from complications from brain tumor surgery. We were very, very close. And then when I was 26, my second son was born with a very extensive spinal cord tumor. Mm-hmm. And the doctors gave him 6 months to live, and they said they could treat him with radiation therapy, but they didn't think that it would help. But actually, he through quite a few different miracles, he was stable for several years. And then we also went through a lot of chronic disease with my dad and my mom. And then when my son was 11, his tumor progressed and he ended up having to have life-saving surgery. And through some other miracles, he made it through. And that really shook us to the core. And, you know, we really got our priorities straight then when we had to go through that with him. Our friends were amazing and our coworkers were amazing in supporting us. And we really learned then what life was all about. And then to go ahead. It took us about 7 years to decide to have another child, and because of everything we had been through. And when he was born, he ended up having a heart condition, and he had some what they thought would be minor surgery when he was 11, and it ended up having complications, and he ended up having open heart surgery to have a valve replacement also when he was 11. And but thank God he did okay. And we just, you know, it was just for years and years, it was just one serious thing after another. I was in a horrible, horrible car accident in Atlanta on my way to work one morning. And that, you know, it was just, like I said, one thing after another. But, you know, looking back, we really can see where these, you know, major incidents in our life brought us to where we are today as far as our priorities and family being, you know, of utmost importance and money being very low on the list of priorities.
Yeah. Well, you know, whenever you have those major trauma points, you know, where something major happens that really causes you to, you know, evaluate life and kind of refocus, you know, it seems that's a common, you know, kind of earth-shattering, life-changing perspective. And it seems like you had many of them. I mean, it was like,
right.
I mean, that was, you know, but I would think that, you know, through each of those events, you know, it only strengthened, you know, what is of value. And then, excuse me, I noted in the introduction that you've got the book called Being Your Best Self, you know, A Young Adult's Guide. You know, it seems that you, in through that book, that you maybe want to instill in young adults that perspective before those kind of events happen.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what I say in the book is, you know, there are self-help books for adults. There's thousands of them. And what's wrong with our society that we need thousands of self-help books for adults? Why are we not teaching our children about what's important in life and about conscious living so that they don't need self-help books when they become adults? You know, why aren't we teaching them about, you know, the priorities in life as far as family and loving kindness and mindfulness, you know, all the things that, you know, like I said, all the things that adults are now learning about conscious living, mm-hmm. or new age living, you know, we should be teaching our children these things. And when I got the idea for it, I checked, you know, to see what books there were out there for teenagers, and I really didn't see anything. And I've been studying, you know, things like this for years, and with my experience of, you know, my life experience, I thought that, you know, I could just as easily write a book as anybody else. So I I started writing, and I kept writing for a couple months until it was done.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works, you know.
I do want
to talk about the book in a little bit, but before we get there, I want to talk just a little bit about your work and, you know, things that you've learned. Like in the introduction, I indicated that you're an oncologist. I always don't know how to pronounce that right. A physician's assistant. But can you tell us maybe some of the, you know, I mean, that's an area where, you know, you're dealing with patients who are, I mean, anyone who deals with an illness is stressed. But when you're talking about cancer, you're dealing with a real, it seems to be a more intense mindset, you know, when someone is working with a cancer diagnosis. So what, can you talk a little bit about that? Like, you know, through those years, you know, what have you learned about, you know, how patients, you know, react, you know, to diagnoses, or, you know, just what are some of the things that you've learned that maybe I guess I'm trying to say that, you know, I'm sure that you've learned about how patients deal with the disease, what are some of the good stories and maybe some of the, you know, the more challenging types of stories or experiences that you've had in that role?
Right, sure. I have to tell you, it is, people ask me all the time, how can you possibly work, you know, in oncology? And it is the most spiritual work, and it is, I find such an honor to and a privilege to work with the patients that I've had over the years. That people with that have life-threatening illness have an amazing resilience and courage that, you know, they themselves never knew that they would have. And it's just an incredible experience to care for people that have to wake up every morning and, you know, remember that they have this disease that they're dealing with. And it's always been amazing to me over the years, just how, the strength that, you know, how people deal with this and the strength that they have. Mm-hmm. You know, and we, you know, we went through similar, you know, instance with our son, but thank God he survived and he's doing well. And actually, when he was about 7 years ago, he actually had a brain tumor, and that the one that had the spinal cord tumor, and he had to have surgery twice. So we've really been through it, but thank God he's fine. But people that, you know, that have incurable diseases, it's really mind-boggling how people deal. And they, you know, they confide in me and they tell me how petrified they are, and I can see it, you know, in their faces, but yet they get up every day and they do what they have to do, and some still work, and, you know, they go to their doctor appointments and they carry on, and it's really amazing. You know, I tend to get very, very close to my patients. In fact, when I practiced family medicine and OBGYN before oncology, and I also for 10 years I worked at an institute for mentally and physically handicapped clients. And when I heard about this my first oncology job, one of the physicians I was working with said, "Kathy, you don't go into oncology. You get too close to your patients. You won't be able to handle it." And I said, no, I really feel drawn to this field. And I, you know, I took the job, and I've been in oncology ever since. And this is, you know, this was, like I said, like about 30 years ago. And I can't even imagine doing any other kind of work. It's just the strength that I get from my clients, and the fact that, you know, a lot of times I'll share with my clients, you know, my patients, what I've been through personally, and it brings us so much closer, because they feel like I'm on their side of the fence. I know what they're going through, and that really gets the bond. But
I could see where that would be the case. You know, that there's that empathy for knowing what they're going through.
Right. And it's what the thing is, that the sad part, I mean, there's a lot of sadness, but one of the things that's upsetting for me is to watch people with a serious illness, you know, finally get it. They finally understand what's important in life. But a lot of times it's too late. You know, by the time they realize that they maybe should have left their spouse, or, you know, that they should change a relationship with somebody, or they're in the wrong job because they're miserable. It's, you know, a lot of times, even if they're strong enough to make the change, it's too late. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. Another reason that I wrote the book is I don't want kids or anybody to have to wait until they're at the end of their life to decide what's important in life, and to realize that they can be happy, to, you know, make changes in their life so that they have what they want.
Yeah. It would certainly make life more fulfilling to have that, to have the perspective of knowing, you know, what's important when everything else is taken away. Really, what does, you know, what matters most? I've known people who have been at end of life and have gotten it, you know, and made amends in a way, or kind of, you know, with people who, you know, maybe they missed out on, you know, a relationship, and then also known some who haven't, and you know, and didn't get it, you know, and it's, you know, to me that was really sad. But the thing is, it seems that, you know, life hands us these situations is a way of kind of shaking us out of our shell in order to kind of reorder our priorities.
Right.
Yeah.
It's. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I think it's what comes out of it. It's hard for me to, you know, to think, well, that it happened, you know, somebody, you know, developed cancer to teach them a lesson or to teach them what's important. I don't think it's, you know, 1 + 2 = 3. I think it happens for a lot of reasons, but you hope that if somebody has to go through that, that they will at least, you know, get something positive out of it.
Right. I agree. Now, one of the things that I found real interesting is and I read in the introduction, was the certified massage therapist aspect of you. So this is another hat, in a way, isn't it, of yours?
Right. So actually, the reason I got into it was when we moved to Israel in 2002, they don't have physician assistants in Israel. They don't recognize the profession here. So I was able to convince the head of oncology at one of the major medical centers here to hire me. And I actually worked as I worked in their research department, helping them run clinical trials. And I did that for about 4 years, and I made minimum wage because they didn't really know what to pay me since they didn't have, you know, my profession.
Right.
So,
right.
So I did, and I wasn't really, I didn't really have direct patient contact, working in the trials department. So I missed it. I love my being with my patients. And so I decided to become a massage therapist, and I took a year-long course and became certified so that I could have something, you know, in my life where I was dealing directly with patients. So I specialized in women with cancer, and I had my massage table, and I drove all around Jerusalem and carried my massage table and went around massaging, and I tried to give some emotional support as well. And I heard about a workshop at Sloan Kettering in New York City where they were certifying people specifically for massaging cancer patients. So I flew over and I took that workshop, and it was really interesting, and I met some great people. But it fulfilled that part of me that needed that direct contact with my patients. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm real curious as to what are the special needs or what would, you know, differentiate, you know, regular massage for someone with cancer. What's the added focus for
right.
someone with cancer?
So the main thing, first of all, there's a general belief that anybody with cancer cannot have a massage, which is totally false. I want to educate the listeners about that. but basically, the special considerations are if somebody had like a visible tumor, like in the abdomen, or like somebody with lymphoma who has, you know, swollen lymph nodes, you don't want to massage directly over a tumor. They say that there's a chance that it could, you know, increase the risk of metastasis, of spread. I don't know how true that is, but to be on the safe side, you know, they tell therapists
just
not to
do
that. The other is that a lot of people who are going through chemotherapy have porticaths, which is a catheter that's placed underneath the skin in the chest wall, so that you can get your chemotherapy through there. And so you have to be, you know, cognizant of that being present so you don't massage over that area. There's also, for example, if, you know, somebody may ask for a massage because one of their limbs is swollen, like their leg might be swollen, then they want you to come massage it. Well, you know, if we work in oncology, you know that the risk for clotting is much, much higher in somebody who has a malignancy. So if somebody, a patient comes to you and one leg is swollen more than another, then the first thing you would want to consider is that they might have a blood clot in that leg. And that's the last thing you want to do is to massage it. So you would refer them to their doctor and have an ultrasound. So there's, you know, this few considerations like that. Those are basically, those are the major ones. Other than that, you know, it's pretty much the same. You can do the same massage as anyone else. You know, you wouldn't want to do a very deep tissue massage, something much more, you know, comfortable for the patient. But those, you know, it's the things that are specific to cancer patients, like I mentioned. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, I had no idea. I mean, all of those make perfect sense, and it, you know, it's good, you know, to know that, you know, people with cancer can get massages. So, you know, for people out there, I mean, because I would think, you know, when it comes to, you know, cancer treatment, at times I would think that a massage would be just what the doctor ordered, so to speak.
Right, exactly. And a lot of the big cancer centers now that have integrative, you know, cancer clinics within them, they do have massage therapists who are specially trained. And they go around while patients are getting their chemotherapy, and they do feet massage and neck massage. And it's wonderful, and the patients love it. And it's great, and it relaxes them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, and also I noticed you're an infant massage instructor. Now, I mean, I love babies. I've had many a baby in my arms, and, you know, massaging their feet, you know, they just melt with that kind of thing. So is there anything in particular, I mean, you know, with your baby massage, I mean, is this for like parents to be able to do with their children?
Yes. Yeah. I don't massage the baby. I'm only an instructor, and I teach parents how to massage their babies. And there's definitely, you know, set strokes that you do with the baby and special considerations. And there's certain strokes that you do to help with colic. And it's amazing.
Oh.
The babies respond to it so much. And one of the things that I really love about it is that dads love it, because when the mom is nursing, the mom has that very special, close physical contact with the baby. And the only thing the dad can do is hold the baby. And when the dad is taught to do the massage, it just opens up a whole nother world to them. It's just adds so much more to their relationship with their child. It's because the baby just, you know, you get that wonderful feedback from the baby showing you know, how much they appreciate your touch, and the dads love it.
Yeah, there's that bonding that happens when, you know, that's great. I'm sure that they do. And, you know, if you show a dad what to do, he's more than happy to do it. You know, sometimes the guys need to know, to be shown, you know, what
right.
to do. So,
right. So. And it's also, it's very, very helpful for teen moms, because they're scared, and they don't know how to approach the baby. They're not sure how to hold the baby or touch the baby. And if you give them these step-by-step instructions for massage, it gives them so much more confidence. So it's, you know, it's great for the baby. It's great for the bonding experience. And they found that especially with babies from addicted moms, they do a lot of infant massage in the hospitals now, and it helps the babies, mature. A lot of them are born premature, and it helps them mature more quickly from the touch. The touch is extremely important when they're in premature babies.
Yeah, it is. Well, we're about halfway through the show, Kathy, so I want to take just a quick break. Do want to invite listeners that if you have any questions for Kathy, call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, you can just type in any questions and we'll get to them. And then when we come back, Kathy, I want to start talking a little bit in detail about being your best self, okay?
Okay, great.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And again, today, my very special guest joining us from Israel tonight is Kathy Pudiak. And we're talking about the power of reinvention and also conscious living. And Kathy is the author of the newly released book, Being Your Best Self, A Young Adult's Guide to Conscious Living. And again, Kathy's book is available at Amazon.com, and there is a direct link to her book there in the show page description. So with that, we're back. Kathy?
Hi.
Hello. Okay. Well, this is great. Now, I want to kind of focus a little bit more on this book, Being Your Best Self. First of all, you know, as I was going through, you know, reviewing the book on Amazon. Amazon does give you a peek inside, so everyone, just for your information, you can go ahead and take a peek. You know, one of the things that struck me first was that even though this is a book, you know, in the title, A Young Adult's Guide, it really is something that can be for any adult, I would think. I mean, because when I was looking at it, it's like, you know, yes, I can see where young adult, this would apply, you know, in particular, but, you know, there are a lot of adults right now that, you know, could use it right now to start, you know, getting on track, so to speak.
Right. So actually it's interesting you say that, because I actually have not really heard directly from any young adults who read the book, only from adults. And what they tell me is they finally got to read a book on conscious living that they understand. You know, many of them have tried to read, you know, books like, you know, Eckhart Tolle or some other, you know, authors where it's very, very deep. And somebody who's new to this type of reading, it's, you know, it's very hard to understand some of those concepts. And so they said, you know, because you wrote it, you know, for a teenager, I was really able to understand it and finally appreciate, you know, things like mindfulness. So I'm really glad that I could do that as well. It wasn't my intention, but it was a nice side effect.
Yeah. Well, you know, and when you think about it, you know, I mean, writing it for, I mean, as you were writing it, you know, you were kind of, you know, focused on a particular age. And I would think, you know, the idea of keeping it simple was, you know, part of the whole idea. And, you know, I know a lot of adults who, you know, would much prefer to have things just simple, you know, just tell me, you know, language I can understand, you know, don't overwhelm me with all kinds of, new words, and, just
right.
Keep it simple so that I can do it. So I could see that would be the case. But anyway, that was the one thing that I really wanted listeners to understand right off, is that even though the title was for, or the title indicates for the young adult, it really is for any adult who really wants to get an understanding of conscious living and, you know, go ahead and start doing it. So I guess probably the first thing you might want to do is, would you explain your perspective of what conscious living is?
Sure. So to me, I actually have a whole section in the introduction that explains conscious living from my perspective. But what it is just living a life without self-imposed limits or limits put on you by, you know, your family or your friends or your boss, or it's realizing that you can have, be, and do anything you want that you put your mind to, that, you know, love is one of the most important things in the world, that gratitude is the key, that, you know, everybody matters, that we're all connected, and because we're all connected, everything that we do has an impact on, you know, everybody around us. And it's basically just, you know, living, it's like taking the blinders off, basically. And just the reason that I'm so passionate about is because for all those years that we were going through all those hard times with all the illness in our family, I felt, subconsciously, I felt that was our, you know, that was our direction, you know, that was like for our incarnation, this incarnation, that's what we were supposed to be going through. We were supposed to be going through suffering, and to get to the other side of understanding, we had to go through all this. And then I just accepted it that, you know, we were, that this is how our life was going to be, and that it could never be great. Like, you know, some of my friends had wonderful lives and had everything they wanted, and their kids were healthy, and, you know, and I thought that could never be for us. I didn't know why. But then when I was about 55, I started, I've been reading self-help books for years and years, but I started studying more about, the law of attraction and things like that. And I realized that just because we'd been through a lot before didn't mean that we couldn't have a great life ahead of us. And all of a sudden, one day, it just dawned on me that, that like the universe is it's like huge sunshine, but I have an umbrella up. And I'm not allowing the sun to come down on me, that I've made this self-imposed prison for myself. And that if I just took the umbrella down, wonderful things could happen. And then we deserved it, and that, you know, we could have wonderful things happen to us just like everybody else. This was not our lot in life. It just happened. And I started doing affirmations and creative visualization and really believing that life could be great. And it did, my whole life turned around, and I just had a completely different outlook. And that's when I thought about wanting to let other people know that it is possible to have a wonderful life. That you have to be open to it and believe that you can have a wonderful life. And to me, that's what conscious living is realizing that you can be happy. You just have to accept the fact that, you know, you have to want to be happy and allow it to happen, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that, I think that it's wonderful that, you know, you went through all of the experiences that you did, making it through, obviously stronger, more confident, more perceptive, more aware. I mean, each of those experiences, I'm sure you learned bunches. about, you know, about not only about the diseases or the illnesses that were involved, but also the strength of family and friends, who was there for you, who wasn't there for you, who was, you know, who were great resources. You know, I mean, I'm sure you learned a lot, so much, you know, each step of the way. You know, and then to come to the point to recognize that, you know, that shifting from that, you know, that this was your lot in life to, no, it doesn't have to be always this way, that it can change, it can be different. You know, that journey in itself, I think, is a model for a lot of people. I think, you know, in a way, that this is what I think is the key of life. In a way, you go through the experiences, you learn from it, you grow, you change, you become happy, you live a fulfilled life, and you share it with others so that they too can do the same thing.
Right. Right. That's exactly where I'm at now. Is, you know, I just want to jump on, you know, the rooftops and tell people you can be happy. Really, believe me, you can be happy. So that's why, you know, I thought I wanted to focus on teens so that they could learn it early. I don't know if they will, but, you know, I can at least try.
Well, you know, I think the first three chapters in that book are, I think, very appropriate for teens, especially, you know, for teens right now. And they're, like, number one, that you matter, two, that we're connected, and tolerance and acceptance. I mean, those three, first of all, that you matter. I mean, we have, you know, a society where teenage suicide in the U.S. is, like, outrageous, you know. It's just...
Right. I think it's the second most common cause of death. I think accidents are first, and second is suicide.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, when you think about it, it's like, wait a minute, you know, you have a whole life ahead of you. You know, what are you doing? So, you know, to recognize, to instill that self-esteem, you know, that you matter, to me is really number one, and it is really necessary in the young adults right now.
Right. That was the first thing. That's why it's the first chapter. That was the first thing I thought of, because you just see so many kids who don't feel like they matter, and they don't understand their role, or, you know, why they're here. And what I do in the book is, for each chapter, I discuss the concept, and then I follow it with a story that, you know, a teenager can relate to. And then after the story are affirmations, and then some exercises that help them really internalize the concept. But in the first chapter, You Matter, one thing that I talked about was, it dawned on me one day, I was putting a puzzle together with my grandson, and we were missing the very last piece of the puzzle. And we looked all over. Yeah, we were looking, and it was right in the middle, and we were looking all over for it, and we couldn't find it. And my grandson said, you know, okay, well, that's okay. You know, I said, what do you mean it's okay? How can you just walk away from it? You know, it's not done. The puzzle's not done. And it made me, like, when I thought about the chapter, I thought of this, you know, I looked back at this incident with my grandson, and I said, you know, the picture is not complete. I don't care if it's just one little piece missing. Unless every single piece is there, it's not a full picture. And that's how I feel about every person. You know, every single person in the world matters. And if even just one person is not there, then it's not a puzzle. It's not a world. You're here for a reason. and yeah. The world would never be the same without you.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, you know, very, and again, you know, that's the one thing that that we really, really need. And, you know, this is interesting that I have to ask, you know, about that, the grandson and the missing piece. You know, in one way, you know, I can see where, you know, the his, you know, the fact that it's okay, that it's not there, you know, that it's okay. I don't know if that's what was your feeling about his reaction that it was okay, that it was not necessarily, you know, finished.
Oh no, it did. I was glad that he could just let it go, because he,
great,
you know,
yeah,
he just walk away and go on to the next game. The only the reason it bothered me was because I'm a perfectionist, which is not all. It's a good thing
okay.
in some ways, and it's not a good thing in other ways. And
well, I know how that is.
Right, and I'm not usually the type of person that, you know, can just let things go like that. But I was actually glad that he could. So I think a lot of that, I think, comes from working in medicine, where, you know, you can't just say something is good enough for your patient. You know, you either give a patient your all or not at all, you know, so that's
true.
Just
and you really need to pay attention to detail, and you know, that's just, it's critical, literally, life and death, you know, in those cases. And, but, you know, it's kind of funny, because you talk about perfectionists, I know, you know, a few people who are very, very much in that mode. But and the one thing, whenever I hear about perfectionists, and is the one, there's one kind of a rustic story. I crochet as a hobby. And
that's great.
One day I was living in New Mexico, and I went to a Native American exhibit or fair, and there was one gentleman there who was weaving his rug, and really kind of the way that he was doing it taught me a better way to do my little hobby. But and when I was talking to him about, you know, about his work, and it's like, you know, boy, there's so much detail there. I says, you know, you have to be really careful, you know, to make sure that everything is perfect. And he looked up at me and he said, you know, it is never perfect. He says, even if I get to the end of the rug and I have not made a mistake, I do one intentionally. He says, because nothing in life is perfect.
That's
so
a great story.
Ever since then, whenever I've made a crochet, you let me baby bucket. Whenever I do one, I intentionally put a mistake hidden somewhere where it's not obvious. But I thought, you know, this is in honor of my Native American friend, teacher.
Right. That's a great story.
Yeah. So one of the other, you know, areas that, you know, the third chapter in the book also that I think is very appropriate to our times is the idea of tolerance and acceptance. And you know, not only in you know, when it comes to the young adults, you know, as far as peer pressure and that kind of thing, but also, I mean, right now it just seems society in general is becoming far less tolerant and accepting of each other. I mean, I don't know. I just think that we're kind of on the wrong course in many, many ways with this area. And I'm glad that you had that in there. So what's the message of this particular, you know, what was the focus? Why did you put that in there? And, you know, and also I would, you know, you're right there in the heat of conflict, so, you know, that's, you know, very globally visible. So What's your view of this?
Right. So that's I put that in there because it's actually absolutely mind-boggling to me that in the year 2017 we're actually going backwards. That instead of becoming more accepting and tolerant of people who are different from us, we're becoming more suspicious and more hateful. And I just can't believe it. It's just, you would think that as we get evolve, we would be going more in the right direction. It's really a topic near and dear to my heart, and that's why I included it. I want so much to teach teens that there's so many more similarities that we have than differences. And like I say in the book, you know, we all cry, we're all happy, we're all sad, we all die, we all get sick, we all have similar bodies. I mean, there's so many more similarities than differences. And why does our society constantly focus on the differences? I am in the hotbed of the world, and it's very interesting hearing what goes on in the news here about the Mideast than the reality of it. Because if the main thing you notice is that if the people in power stay out of it, everybody gets along fine. I mean, I shop at a grocery store where Jews and Palestinians shop side by side together. They stand in line together. You know, they talk. I worked at a hospital where Arab doctors took care of Jewish patients and Jewish, doctors took care of Arab patients.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone got along fine. People of all different, persuasions would be sitting in the waiting room and, or in the emergency room, waiting room, and getting coffee for each other. And, when someone would get bad news, everybody would come around each other, even though they didn't know each other. And really, when it comes right down to it, people here, they're fine with each other. It's the leadership that has to stir things up so that they can stay in power and they can control people. But, on the day-to-day, we all interact with each other on a day-to-day basis. And you hear about, rock throwing or, different thing, terrorist incidents, but it's really the minority. It's vast minority.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis, the vast majority of us all get along fine. And, in cities like Yaffa, where next to Tel Aviv, there's a huge, Arab and Jewish population living together side by side, and everyone gets along fine.
Wow. Well, that is so good to hear. I'm really glad to hear about your experience. Sad to hear about the politicians, but that doesn't surprise me. But it's really good to recognize that, for those of us who don't have that personal experience, to recognize that what we are seeing isn't necessarily reflective, or isn't reflective of what is actually happening in the day-to-day life in that area.
Right. Right, because it doesn't sell papers. You have to always tell about the worst side of humanity to sell papers. And leaders of countries, they can't control you if everybody's happy and doing well. They can only control you when you're miserable and you're blaming your misery on somebody else.
Yeah, I see that. Well, Kathy, we are down toward the end of the show. This has really been great. Is there maybe anything that we didn't cover that you would like to share with listeners, or any final words?
No, I just would like to just quickly, I want to go through the chapters just so the readers or the listeners know what is in the book.
Perfect.
It's, you know, as you said, the first one is You Matter, and that we're all connected, acceptance and tolerance. The fourth chapter is Opportunity, where I want, you know, people to realize that there is amazing opportunity out there, but you have to be open to it and recognize it and be willing to take risks. The fifth chapter is Open to Abundance, which is a lot about, you know, law of attraction and keeping your vibrational level high so that you can attract the things that you want in your life. Chapter six is Knowledge is Power, because I feel like the teenagers, you know, they're on the internet enough that when they are, we should be encouraging them to be learning things while they're on the internet, not just watching videos. Chapter seven is just about mindfulness. Eight is Inner Knowing, which is teaching them about following their intuition. Nine is Dare to Be Creative, where I tried to explain that even if you're not an artist or a dancer, there's always ways that you can express your creativity. Number 10 is Loving Kindness. Obviously, you know, to show other people, you know, how much you care. 11 is Gatekeeper, teaching them to be careful about what they put into their body as well as what goes out of their body as far as their speech and their actions. And 12 is The Ultimate, which is Gratitude. And if you're grateful for what you have, all the rest comes pretty easily.
Yeah, that's a great, that covers a wonderful range of topics. And, you know, I especially love the Knowledge is Power, you know, because, you know, to me, I'm amazed at, I mean, I would refer to when a friend of mine and I are kind of talking about the dumbing down of America. I mean, it was like, you know, here we are, you know, so connected to such a wealth of information, but there are so many people who don't know even some of the basics of life, you know, and so, you know, that is really important not to, you know, to learn and not just to, you know, react and mindless, you know, kind of activity. And I like that creativity aspect too, because, you know, so often people do look just to the artistic aspect as far as creativity, but each and every one of us is creative, and no matter what we do. And, you know, once we recognize that we're creators, you know, every day we can, you know, create what it is that we want, you know. And so that's a great topic as well. So,
right.
Well, Kathy, I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it too.
Great. It's been my pleasure. And again, you know, the link that I sent you, you can feel free to use that anytime. The show will be available in the archives, you know, shortly after we're through. And I really want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Robert. And thank you all your listeners too.
Great. It's been my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Kathy Pudiak. She's joined us from Israel. Again, she is author of the book, Being Your Best Self, A Young Adult's Guide to Conscious Living. You just heard the chapters that she recapped. It's a great range of topics. So if you are a young adult or you have a young adult in your life, it's a great book. Or even if you are an adult, it's a great way to go ahead and get on track with conscious living. And her book is available from Amazon.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.